Hello, welcome. Episode 86.
Episode 86. Almost like you were in a submarine for that one.
Yeah, I was in Run Silent, Run Deep, the 50s submarine movie.
Yeah, that was, you know what? That was a great theme song. We just did. That was the cheese guy.
Jay Spaulding. Yep. Mm-hmm. That theme song, I did not know that he was in a street corner doo-wop band. Yeah. I did not know that was his hobby of choice between cheesing. Yeah, he was great. I actually saw him at the podcast.
And between Tom Cheesery.
Tom Cheesery. That's not a real thing.
No.
Yeah, he's excited. I told him that that's an excellent theme song. So we welcome Mr. Spaulding and your cheesy theme song. Ha, yes. Get it? What else do we need to talk about?
We have to talk about a couple of things, little businessy things. First, one thing, we had no idea how many of you actually had the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yeah.
We've been getting inundated with emails, you guys saying, I have it, let me send it to you. So
I actually emailed someone back, the P.O. box, so I guess one is in the mail.
Oh, so did I. So maybe we might have two in the mail now.
Sweet. We each need to own our own.
Yes. So you guys can stop emailing us saying that you have it. We've been taken care of by many fans.
Them. Yeah, keep sending
we'll put it on the store until Lucasfilm finds out.
Can you ever have enough Star Wars Wookiee family coming over for Christmas?
With weird sexual holodeck imagery for young Wookiees.
Like, honestly, here, do you have Shatner singing Rocket Man at the Sci-Fi Awards? Can you send us that?
That I think is on YouTube.
Rocket Man, and I'm going to be high as a kite by then.
So thank you, everyone.
Thank you for that.
And also, one thing we got to talk to you about, we pulled the show from Stitcher, and for various reasons, but the main reason was because they put our show on there without telling us or asking our permission and then started selling ads on it.
Yeah, when we found out it was on Stitcher, initially we were like, oh, okay, I guess it's just another place for fans to get the show. That's cool.
Like, and we thought it was more like an iTunes kind of thing.
Yeah, just another a server for people to download it. And then several things happened. They split the feed, which, not to get too tech heavy on you, they took the feed from Libsyn, the company that we host the show.
So you don't know how much what your numbers are when you get your stats.
And our numbers
anymore.
Dropped over the summer,
and we didn't know why. We're like, what? Thousands of people just disappear.
We were like, I guess everyone's on vacation.
Yeah.
No, they were taking the feed, so it dropped our overall numbers. Wouldn't give us the numbers, and just so you guys know, for advertising for podcasting, that's huge. How many downloads you get per episode determines.
Yeah, and you need it in one report. You can't go. Oh, here's it here. Here's it here. Here's it. It can't be piecemeal.
Especially if it's piecemeal, when one of the pieces they won't tell you,
right?
Which is, to use legal parlance, is fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
So then we found out recently, that they're putting banner ads and stuff like that on, because Stitcher, I guess, is a phone, like an iPhone app. And
right, it's like Pandora.
It's like Pandora. And so they're playing ads and clickable ads on our show.
By the way, you think Pandora just puts Death Cab for Cutie on without telling them?
Yeah, that record label gets nothing. That record label doesn't go, hey, wait a minute.
It's like, you should be happy we're playing your records.
Which is what the fucking emails these jackalopes sent to us.
Yeah, it was pretty irritating. It's like, you should be happy we're exploiting you. More people are hearing it. No, that's not how it works.
We work in the entertainment industry where we actually get paid.
Yeah,
so
you actually, content it should be respected.
Yeah, man. And so they were making money off of our show and had no intention of paying us. And when we finally emailed them, because we found out, Chris Hardwick had a similar run in about a month or so ago with Stitcher and pulled Nerdist from them.
Yeah, there's a lot of shows that have been pulled.
Are sick of it.
Yeah.
And I read Chris's blog that he put the back and forth emails, and these people then, so I sent them and said an email saying, you guys need to, we're going to pull the show and you need to pay us, and from there. And then they wrote back, and I CC'd our attorney. And then they wrote back saying, we tried to get a hold of you. And then...
Yeah, you know how hard it is to get a hold of us?
Yeah, it's so difficult.
Yeah. That's, anyone with a computer can email us.
If you Google comedian Graham, without even my last name, right. You will get info on how to find me.
Right. Or just Comedy Film Nerds. We have a contact page. Yeah. It's very simple.
We have a website.
You found us.
Yeah.
Fans trying to send us Star Wars holiday specials.
Well, how you could find
how
us,
did you do it?
But Stitcher couldn't.
Boy, Stitcher should hire you with your crazy detective skills.
Yeah, you guys are like Jim Rockford. You're amazing how you tracked us down. It's weird. On the internet, it's so hard to find people who have Facebook, Twitter accounts, their own websites. So difficult. So they sent us this email with all this nonsense in it.
And then they insulted our attorney.
They insulted our attorney. They didn't realize they attached some email chain, internal email chain.
Right, that we weren't supposed to
see. That we weren't supposed to see, but they're so dumb that they were like, oh, why are they hiring an attorney? Save your money for a dog walker.
Yeah, they're more useful.
They're cheaper and more useful. So our attorney saw that and was like,
all right, the game on.
Guess what? Gloves just came off,
yeah,
bitches.
Now it's copyright infringement.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about right now with Stitcher.
And then they sent us an email saying, why don't you just call us? There's no, that they didn't CC our attorney.
Yeah, hey, why don't we just work it out? We'll call you guys.
Oh, so you just, so when you hit reply all and then forgot to include.
Or no, you have to actively
delete someone from the reply all.
Yeah.
So again, you are idiots or think that we're fucking stupid.
Yeah, so
we're done with those assholes.
Now, we do want to say, though, is like, well, I don't want to use iTunes. How do we subscribe to your podcast? It's actually very simple. There's a podcast player on our site that if you open up, you can get the just the RSS feed. You can actually right in your browser, you could subscribe to it like a blog, and you could play it right there. You could download the episode,
right.
And you can even get our app for iPad, iPhone, Android. It's only $1.99, and it will stream every single episode we've ever done, uh-huh. And include bonus content for each episode. So in addition to getting them all at your fingertips that don't take up any space on your device, you also get extra content like a guest talking about a movie pick or uh-huh. a horrible experience they've had in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, like dealing with Stitcher.
Right. yeah, this would be a long extra.
Yeah. But don't piss off comedians, FYI. We don't bite our tongues like you fucking mopes. You fucking heckle us, you shitheads. Not that I'm angry about it.
No.
So what else? Oh, we're going to need to give some shout outs. Doug and I had a great show up in San Jose, which was awesome, at the San Jose Improv, and a lot of kitten hands up there, which was awesome. And also at the Tipsy Crow in San Diego the night before Thanksgiving was really cool. So it was awesome, everyone coming out to the show. So
that
was great.
Well, I want to thank everybody, too, for you guys are really supporting the store. Like, we're still getting a lot of orders from Australia. You know, really appreciate you guys down under, really pulling out those international credit cards. Much appreciated.
You make them sound like they're magical.
Yeah, they are. They live in hobbit holes, and they come out with their keys and their credit cards, and they buy merchandise. It's fantastic.
It's great.
And everything there is made of candy.
Everything in Australia is made of candy.
Yeah.
That is a fact. You can Google that.
And it's upside down.
Everything's upside down. Everything's upside down.
And made of candy.
Yeah, it's like some sort of Willy Wonka-esque. It's an island.
But as a country.
But it's a whole country of people.
Yeah, it's run by a snowman. It's great.
Going, arrow. I want some shrimps on the Barbie. Horrible accent.
So we really, really appreciate everybody buying a lot of stuff. We still got a lot of free stuff to give you guys, too. It's like when you buy stuff, we still have Comedy Central water bottles. We've got Cartoon Network swag that Derek and Dave brought in. We still have that stuff when you buy over $100 worth of stuff. We have tons of Woot Monkeys. So.
And in honor of Black Friday, we'll come to your house and trample you and spray you in the face with pepper spray. Like, we will do that.
Sure.
You know, that's what we offer.
We'll add that to the store as a service.
The store, you'll get pepper sprayed virtually.
Yeah.
It'll come out of your computer, which is easy to do.
There's an app for that.
There is an app. There is a pepper spray app. God, there should be one.
Yeah.
I'd fucking buy the shit out of that.
I think we hit everything,
We got a lot of business to take care of.
And we're very excited. Let's introduce our guest. Now, we've been doing, like, mixing it up. There's a lot of comedians and non-comedian but film guests. We've been, like, we had Doug last week. This week we have a documentary filmmaker, but he's not boring. So that's that's a plus.
I'm a documentary filmmaker, Chris. What are you implying? He's not dead weight like you, Graham.
Yeah, yes, I'm just saying.
Boring,
just
like, you know, documentary.
When you really want to be stuck in a room with Ken Burns, I'm just saying. Great documentary filmmaker.
Love your movies, Ken.
On.
He's got to be a dullard.
Yeah, yeah.
He just has to be a dullard. or Michael Moore. Shut up.
So anyway,
ladies, this is a horrible intro, by the way.
Yeah, this is like, boy, our guest is just like, this guy is nothing.
I just hope I'm not boring.
yeah. The bar has been set.
I'm just like not drone.
You got to be more interesting than Ken Burns.
That's a great our guest. Let's hope he's not a boring asshole. Here he is.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've had the pleasure of actually going to college with this gentleman, and we've worked together over the years on various movies. Please welcome Frank Woodward.
Hello.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it. How was your Thanksgiving?
Boring. Dull.
Watch documentaries
turkey.
All day.
Watch the History Channel documentaries. Just the lowest of the low. Something about paper, I believe.
It was a documentary on paper.
Yes, documentary on paper.
And, thrilling.
Yeah, it was really good. Lots of moving shots, long Ken Burns push-ins on paper.
With just droning voiceover.
Not even a voiceover, actually. It was just talking heads, just some old guy who used to make paper.
Well, in the 1700s, the paper mill was originally used.
It used to be papyrus.
Papyrus, and donkeys were initially used in the manufacture. Oh, great.
It's like listening to NPR 24/7.
But we're going to get into Frank's movies a little later. But just so you know, he's done a lot of work in horror and documentaries with Lovecraft, Fear of the Unknown, The Splat Pack, and then he's working with Men in Suits. And then maybe you'll announce the new documentary here.
We'll plant some hints.
Yes.
Sure. He's going to cock tease you about his new documentary.
Well, the danger is.
In a
non boring way. Well, the danger is the moment you say you're going to do something, you actually have to do it. That's the problem.
I know. Believe me, I'm well versed in that. Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into it. Movies. The Muppets. I actually saw The Muppets this weekend, and I'm so happy to report that it's good.
Awesome, because the original is still like one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it really is, and it's the whole, we grew up with The Muppets, and it was the kind of thing where, man, I wish they would do it right, and you know, you have like Muppet Treasure Island, all these were kind of okay, they just didn't go anywhere, then The Muppets went away for a while, and you're like, well, maybe their time is over, but no, somebody can do this right. Yeah. Who's going to do this? And Jason Segel came along, and he did it. And I did a full review on the site, but I want to say one of the things that people may not realize is he kind of took the formula of the Brady Bunch movies, and that's kind of what it was, is you have these characters that are ultimately obsolete and out of time. It's unironic humor. What do you do with them? You put them in the real world, but you don't change the characters. You don't hip them up. You don't make them edgier or darker. You put them in this juxtaposition of the real world that doesn't really, where they don't really fit. And that's where the movie just shines. It really, it's nostalgic. It's funny. It's, in a weird way, it's both nostalgic and postmodern at the same time, because it kind of goes over all those questions that we would have as viewers. Well, aren't these guys obsolete? Does anybody care about them anymore? And the answer is yes. And the journey that the Muppets go on is almost the same as the journey as the viewer. Like, oh, we're so glad that they're back. And I have to mention the breakout Muppet character is 80s Robot. Hilarious. And that's the one that no kid is going to get. That, you know, we brought, you know, our daughter. She had no idea what he was talking about. But 80s Robot, he comes up, would you guys like a tab? You know, and he comes out really funny. No, he's Kermit's valet. It's really, really funny. And the cameos are really good. Jack Black does a great job in this movie. And one of the things I put in the review is the key for a good cameo for a Muppets movie, for a celebrity, you never not treat the Muppets like they're not real. You treat them like they're actual characters. Yeah. Like, hey, frog. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, you're like, no, that's an actual frog in front of you talking. And that's all the cameos did a really good job, but mostly Jack Black did a really good job with that. So, you know, you see Zach is in there. Zach, he does a real nice cameo, and there's some real good cameos, and it's just it just made you feel good, this movie. No matter how dead inside or jaded you are, this movie will make you feel good, because
for every all you dead inside cynics out there.
I think, you know, I mean, it's the kind of thing where you kind of hear, like, sniffles in the audience from like our age. It's like, because it's so nostalgic, it just kind of washes over you. And Jason Segel just does an amazing job with the movie. I mean, it, obviously, it wasn't just him, it was the director, and you know, he brought in some of his Hollywood friends to help write it and stuff. But Amy Adams does a great job. She's kind of like the enchanted character, where she's kind of like, you know, the goody-goody small town, but it, you know, but it works. And it's just a really fun family movie. And I say that in every sense of the word. Family movie means everyone can enjoy it, not that it's for kids. And that's kind of what it is. And the Muppets are great. They really stay true to the characters. A lot of the voices sound pretty good. I mean, it's I think one or two of the original performers, and then a couple are new, like obviously not Jim Henson, but not Brian Henson or Frank Oz. Frank Oz opted out, but they sound really good, and it's a real nice job, and it's making money too, so it was good to see. There's a couple of annoying things in it, like because you know it's a Disney property now. It's not Jim Henson Productions. You know, mm-hmm. Jim Henson had sold the Muppets years ago, so every billboard is Cars 2 or some horrible right. Disney product placement is in there. You're like, oh come on, really? Really? You know, it gets a little slow in some of the parts, but ultimately this is a win. This is a win for Jason Segel especially, and it's a win for the Muppets, and it shows that if the right person comes along, the right artist, takes the right material, does the right thing at the right time, you can have something really cool.
I think that's sort of the key, you know.
And that's what Hollywood doesn't get. I mean, it's like when you go, oh, Ang Lee's going to do the Hulk. What?
I know.
No!
Like, you need to get people who are... like, I'm sure Jason Segel is...
huge Muppet. He went in to meet with with Disney, and it's like, he brought it up. What about the Muppets?
Yeah, because he probably was a kid, you know, and watched those movies when we did. And
right.
Thought they
and
were
the show, yeah.
Yeah, and the Muppet Show was so great. It was
right.
such a
groundbreaking.
Great show. And that's like... you're right. Like, I don't understand why Hollywood just continually doesn't see, like, so many of the successes that they've had are because the people involved were so passionate
fans.
Right.
It's like, you know, you have Sam Raimi does Spider-Man. That's what was great because he loves Spider-Man. And then you get the guy that did Vertical Limit to do Green Lantern. What? Yeah.
But I mean,
that
like, Frank, you know
sense.
This from doing, like, you don't make documentaries about subjects you don't give a shit about.
Well, no, the passion helps. I mean, especially with documentaries, mm-hmm. but and we'll get into that later. But you really want to have somebody who wants to make that film, and they're not just doing it for the paycheck. Mm-hmm. But everything, I don't think Hollywood even thinks about they just want somebody they know will deliver right. a film on time, on budget, roughly, and make it look shiny. And that's all that they really – that's the bottom requirement. If you get somebody who's really passionate about it, great. But that's not – they probably didn't greenlight the Muppets for more than anything than people know who Muppets are. They can go and cash in on that audience.
Yeah, and there's toys to sell.
Toys to sell. And people – you know, Muppets, although they've been gone, people – recognize what they were, and they remember the nostalgia of it all.
And you also hit both audiences. You've got people growing up with it, and then kids. And everyone knows when you release the studios, and when you release a family film, that's instantly two tickets:
right.
one kid, one exactly. adult,
and then Christmas toys
and Christmas right. toys. Yeah, mm-hmm. But they were lucky with this one. I've not seen it yet, but I've heard reports of people crying. Exactly. I mean, they were crying, just happy to see the Muppets again.
Yeah,
and happy to see it done well. That's great. I mean, I've been working with the Henson people on the Men in Suits documentary, mm-hmm. And they were shooting it at the time, and it's great to see them back. Yeah. But not that they've ever been gone. They've right. never been busier.
Yeah.
A lot of, if you guys check out, there's some really cool YouTube videos that were recently made in the last couple of years. They're really funny, too.
Exactly. I didn't know Frank Oz opted out, though.
He did. Frank Oz opted out. He apparently wrote a version of the first script and that Disney passed on.
Wow.
Then they took Jason Segel's script, but obviously they made changes to Jason's, too. But Frank Oz, he didn't really like the new direction, and he opted out. But also, he's like, he's not really interested in voicing Miss Piggy anymore. He just wants to direct movies.
Right.
So for him, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a huge thing for him. But so it's definitely worthwhile. Go see it, even if you don't have kids, and if you remember the Muppets, I think you'll like this movie.
I'm absolutely going to see it.
Yeah,
no, I will. I'll be there.
Okay, next movie, Descendants.
Yeah, I saw this last night, and
I was excited to see this movie. I haven't seen it yet.
I was excited to see it too, and it's decent. I felt a little let down, just a touch. I mean, George Clooney is great in it. Some of the other characters I thought were written sort of kind of two-dimensional. You know, I mean,
So it wasn't on par with Sideways?
No, it wasn't. No, I mean, it's... I like Alexander Payne. I like what he does. And overall, I like this film. Mm-hmm. But, like, some of the characters just felt like... I mean, it's based on this book. You know, like, some of the kids and stuff, I just feel like teenage kids are just written in just this typical, like, the girl that's like, oh, whatever. And it's just like, does that it's all that we're going to get. You know what I mean? I mean, and there is, there's
a little too cliched,
a little too cliched. And they, you know, the daughters, you know, have an arc and they go through this whole thing, and it's, there's some really good moments in it. And, you know, like Beau Bridges plays one of his cousins, and there's some great scenes and moments. And again, Clooney is just such an engaging actor. I just felt like there was just some scenes that I just felt a little cliched, and I almost, that's almost too strong of a word.
But everyone got a vacation in Hawaii.
Everyone got a vacation in Hawaii. But that's the other cool thing, though. It is very much sort of a postcard and a little bit of a history of Hawaii, and that was kind of interesting because it is based on this book and this family that, you know, there are some families that have been in Hawaii for hundreds of years that own a lot of everything, and that's sort of the background of this, of Clooney and his family and what he's going through with his, you know, his wife and everything like that. So I it's definitely worth seeing. Is it like Oscar front runner? I don't know that I would put it there, me personally.
Yeah, how about for performance?
It's again, George Clooney, man, he's just good in everything.
Solid,
he does. Like,
yeah.
I'll watch anything that he does, and I even hate, like, I feel like I'm nitpicking a little bit with this film, because overall,
what's it about? Just a dysfunctional family,
well,
pretty much.
Well, yeah, but it's the way they tell that story is very sort of engaging. The movie starts out, his wife is injured and in a coma, and so he kind of he's sort of this workaholic guy, and he has to sort of take over. And clearly, his marriage hasn't been that great, and this is all stuff that's in the trailer. But then he finds out that she was having an affair. And then
while she was in the coma.
While she was in the coma. It was a really crazy affair.
Wow, this film sounds awesome.
It's amazing. Yes. Yes. And she's a time traveler.
Yeah.
And she's
time traveling coma?
Yeah.
Philanderer?
Who surfs. Right. Yes.
I didn't know Alexander Payne had that in.
That was the pitch, yeah, right there. So it, yeah.
Takes sideways, but with time travel.
And swords.
Yeah.
Huh? No, it's so he sort of, you know, Clooney hasn't been that good of a dad, and he hasn't been that good of a husband, and he sort of has to confront this. And, you know, so, and also there's this big pink piece of land his family may or may not sell to developers. Then there's he's dealing with whether or not she stays a lot, you know what I mean? Like her health, what's going to happen. And so there's all these things that he's sort of wrestling with while he's got these daughters that just have not had any discipline.
So is it more drama or comedy, or is it like a dramedy, like a mix?
It's definitely a mix. And again, that's probably where I get a little critical is, you know, sometimes I just feel like when someone is trying to attempt a dramedy, it's so easy to push it or force it. You know what I mean? Like, we got to have a wacky scene in here, and we got to have the grandparent that doesn't hold back their words, and we got to have the kid that's a dummy, and, like, you know, the friend of the, like, it just...
I wonder if that was all in the book.
I don't know. I would be curious to read the book, because it just...
Who wrote the book? Do we know?
The book. Let me look that
up. I'm sorry.
No, that's a valid question.
Well, because this was one of those films where I didn't see the trailer. I saw the poster. I saw that George Clooney was in it and Alexander Payne directed it. But beyond that, I didn't know anything about it. I like the director. I like the actor. But I don't know anything about the film. And I'm not sure if that's just because it's small, independent, under the radar type of thing, or if the book has some cachet that I don't know about.
Well, the book, hold on, I'm looking it up right now.
So while Graham's looking it up, why don't we talk about the Cronenberg movie that you saw, Frank?
Oh, yes, A Dangerous Method.
Yes. No monsters in it, though, right?
No monsters in it. It's basically about the relationship between Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud, and how those both were pioneering psychoanalysis. And beyond that, I'm not really entirely sure. Outside of Carl Jung getting involved with one of his patients, played by Keira Knightley, and you have Michael Fassbender as Jung, and Viggo Mortensen as Freud. It's one of those films that you see it, you respect it because you like the actors; they're doing a very good job. But I was never really sure for long periods about what the film was really about. At first, it seemed about a psychiatrist crossing the line with one of his patients and getting into kind of deviant spanking things. And then it became more about a falling out with a father figure.
Maybe it was really about David Cronenberg.
It may have been about David Cronenberg because there was spanking involved, and he's... Well, if you look at his films, he's got some issues.
Yeah. Did he do like with some of his other films, like what was the other one where Viggo Mortensen was the killer?
A History of Violence.
Yeah. Did he do it where he shoots sex completely unerotically?
There wasn't much eroticism. Because I think also with this film,
he deliberately makes the sex scenes make you feel uncomfortable,
right? And that's exactly what happens here, because it's supposed to be uncomfortable, because you realize he's the character's crossing a line by having an affair with his patient, even though they eventually it goes other ways. I don't want to give any spoilers for this film,
sure,
to your listeners. I can't say I don't recommend it, because there's definitely some quality acting going on here, but at the same time, it feels like one of those films that come out around Oscar time. You put a lot of very high profile actors in playing historical figures, and that's usually going to be.
But then, how does David Cronenberg fit into that formula?
I don't know, but this is later Cronenberg. This is the
Cronenberg
that we've had since
History of Violence.
History of Violence, yeah, exactly, and with Eastern Promises, all. Both films of which are better than this one, I think.
Interesting.
I can't say that A Dangerous Method is much better than Eastern Promises or History of Violence. I didn't really know what the point of the film was for any. The first half seemed about one thing. The second half seemed about another, and threads were forgotten. It just seemed really more like Oscar baits than a cohesive film.
Wow. All right. So
he's
wait
putting
for
in a bunch of intense scenes to win Oscars.
Yeah, exactly. And there's, it's like, oh, there's Keira Knightley's Oscar-nominated moment. Oh, right. There's Viggo, that type of thing.
Right, right. Well, now Graham's back from the Barnes & Noble. Did you find the...
it's right around the block. Yeah. The Barnes & Noble.
I'm sorry I asked. I wanted to know.
No, I want to know, too. It's the writer is Kawi Hart Hemmings, a woman who actually has a small part. She plays... George Clooney's secretary, Noe. But I can't find much information itself on the book. But I'm assuming, based on seeing the book and the author's name, that she is somebody that grew up in Hawaii, and this is sort of loosely based on events that have happened and stuff like that, is my guess. Which again, that's a part of the film I really like. I just felt like
some parts of it felt kind of true. Some parts kind of felt forced.
I felt like my guess is, and I don't know this. My guess is that in the adaptation, they felt like they needed to write these characters in a certain way.
They movied it up.
They had them, yeah, exactly. Like they movied it up a little bit, where they just didn't translate the actuality from the book as well as they
could
have.
Right. You know what's interesting is you're giving a very similar review to Dean Haglund, who actually did a written review on the site right now. And he said the same thing. He's like, it feels like a European movie, but ultimately it kind of misses the mark. It's too bad.
It does. I mean, there's some really good moments in there, and there's some really wonderful scenes, but it just, there's so many scenes where I was like, what? That's... I feel like I'm watching a Disney film or something. Oh, you know what I mean? Like
note.
Studio note. The boatniks in Hawaii or something.
Yeah, exactly. The boatniks go to Hawaii. That's exactly what I felt like I was watching. Yeah, like just, kids that swear and crotchety old people, and just felt like they just were using a character software, that just
randomized.
Yeah,
just randomized family.
Yeah, just
location,
so
Hawaii.
Dramatica was involved.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I felt. So anyway.
All right, speaking of random, I actually saw Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1. I took one for the team.
You, sir, are a saint.
And I've seen every single one of these movies, too.
Oh,
and they're really, really fascinating in a train wreck kind of way. And, I don't know where to begin with this movie. I really don't. But I think I'll start with just mentioning that, oftentimes any type of art is geared towards a certain member of the audience. You know, there's certain, you know, genres appeal to certain members of the audience, certain parts of the audience, certain demographics, certain age ranges. So I can only imagine that Twilight is the whole series, the books, is just appealing to stupid women with low self-esteem. That's the only explanation I can possibly have for any of these movies or books. It's like, okay, you have a protagonist that does nothing. All she does is mope and need to be saved. Either she's running to a monster or from a monster. And that's it. And finally, she's marrying one. Oh, happy day.
And he puts a demon baby in her belly.
And yeah, let's not... Spoiler alert.
Isn't that a spoiler?
And what fascinates me is the complete disregard of any type of vampire or werewolf lore. It's okay to fuck with the genre a little bit. Got no problem with that. Buffy, you know, anything. Even Underworld. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a war, fine. But when you do bullshit like, okay, well, vampires, if when they go into the sun, they get sparkly, and then you have a wedding outside and no one's sparkly, and then you go on a tropical honeymoon and he's not sparkly, well, now you're just fucking with your own stupid rules at this point. And it's so unbelievably ridiculous. I loved it. The opening of this movie, the very first scene, is Taylor Lautner with his shirt off, throwing down the wedding invitation because he's so angry. Ugh. And I'm thinking, well, he has to buy a gift. That's probably why.
Yeah.
He's so angry. What do I get her?
Of course he's got his shirt off.
What do you buy a vampire who has everything?
Yeah. And it was unbelievable.
Cuisinart?
This movie.
Did you get her Cuisinart?
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. And by the way, expressionless, not really an acting choice.
Oh,
you
man.
Know, with Kristen Stewart, it's like, okay, all this crazy shit going on. You're happy. You're sad. You're about to die because you're giving birth to a demon baby. Same expression through the entire film. And then there's these random rules. And I'm not a spoiler alert. And you can't even spoil it. This is the first half of the story. So it's like it just ends. But you have these weird rules. It's like, oh, well, this is what's going on. This is the rule. This is why they're fighting. And then towards the end, oh, wait, there's this new rule. Now there's no fighting. But wait, what about those other rules? No, this is the new rule. Supersedes all the other ridiculous rules that we're making up as we go along. And... I just don't know what message this is sending, where's the take home? All men are monsters. All women are victims. What is it? What are you getting out of this franchise? What is anyone getting out of this franchise?
All men are monsters.
I don't know, and that's why I'm looking at it. And I'm like, what is this? Why does this exist? That kind of thing. Like there's no redeeming social message. There's no value. And then it occurred to me that that's the whole point. There isn't one. It doesn't make any sense because I read a news article this morning, and this is great. This epitomizes the whole Twilight franchise. This is what the takeaway and the people that are fans care about. Wedding shops are getting very, very angry because fans of the series are lying about being engaged because they want to try on Bella's dress in the wedding shops. So now all the wedding shops are getting angry and telling you, stop coming into the shops and trying on Bella's dress.
Jesus.
So it's all about, you know, you have an 18-year-old getting married, forget that it's a monster, and then you're getting married, and it's like, well, what about, you know, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? I don't care. I want to marry the vampire. You know, it's, you have a perpetual victim, and this is not anything against young adult literature. This is not anything against vampires or werewolves, or it kind of is, but because let's take another very popular franchise that has a heroine and also a love triangle that is amazing, Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
Here is the exact opposite of Twilight because you have a protagonist that actually does things and makes decisions instead
she's
of always
kind of
getting
badass,
into trouble.
Too.
Yeah, she's a huge badass, but it's also she's very troubled and she's very victimized and she's the whole package. That's a fucking heroine, not someone who mopes because they can't decide which monster to marry. And then she's always having to be saved. It's like, oh, the werewolves have to save you from the vampires. Now the vampire has to save you from the other vampires. And now, oh, you're on the side of a mountain in a tent. Now you have to be saved because you forgot a sweater and you're cold. That was my favorite scene in one of the other movies where she actually got cold and she's freezing. Now what do I do? Uh-oh, Taylor Lautner, take his shirt off, warm her up. Now you need to be saved because you didn't pack properly.
Here's my thing with Taylor Lautner, his character in this. If I look like that guy... And some girl blew me off for a pale-faced, scraggly vampire.
Yeah, get
Fuck that, bro. Yeah, get another girl.
Get over it.
I'd be like, I'm Taylor Lautner. I'm just to walk with my shirt off through a swimsuit model shoot and just pick which three I want to date.
Yeah.
Like,
and if they run away, turn into a wolf and chase them.
Chase
you're
them
faster.
Down. Yeah, you're faster.
That's the, you know, it's, you know, and you'll know where they live. You'll get their scent.
Yeah. Hunt them down.
It's so insane, and it's I have to say, young adult girls deserve better. So read The Hunger Games.
I had heard that the birthing scene has been causing seizures.
Yes, I have heard that as well, and that's because the acting is so bad that it's causing people to collapse in the movie theater.
Well, if you've ever been to Comic-Con before, you probably already knew this from the Twihards in Hall H. Yeah. Oh, good God.
It's fascinating to watch, and you know, my wife and I saw it together, and we're watching it because she was a little curious, and she just looked at me through the movie like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Yeah. I said, I know, I need to see it for work.
Well, your wife has a college degree and a decent job and some self-respect. That's what...
Yeah. It's really fascinating. And just to Stephanie Meyer, what I don't understand is that, like, if you could have made a really cool story with a an active protagonist and some a lot more interesting than what ended up coming up. You have anyway. Girls, don't be victims. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to...
Don't marry monsters.
Yeah, your choice is, as Laura House says, your choice is better than monsters.
Yeah.
You don't have to marry a werewolf or a vampire. What if Laura House... This is where we need a Laura House.
I know.
She's like, what if the mummy comes to town? Then what's going to happen? So... Anyway, if you're going to see this movie, even that entire tirade, we're not going to change your mind.
Yeah,
so
you're there on board.
These are the Adam Sandler movies of young adult female literature with werewolves and vampires. So they're reviewer proof.
The sad part is now you have to see part two because you don't know what happens.
Exactly. Oh. It cuts right in the middle. I'm like, oh, I can't wait. And by the way, it didn't have to be two movies. There was a lot of moping. A lot of the other characters had to pick up the moping because there was so much time to fill.
Just edit out the moping and the shirt taking off.
Yeah, and then you'd have 4 minutes. So look forward to the second half.
You should have just made it a YouTube video, is what you're saying. You should have just made...
I'm sure there is a moping montage.
Oh, my God.
From the Twilight fans, so there's a moping montage.
It's a fascinating phenomena that none of us in this room will ever understand.
Yeah.
Or appreciate. Or have any respect for.
Right, and the people who made those movies are billionaires, and we're bitching about Stitcher.
Yes.
So I guess we've obviously made some mistakes.
Where's the lesson? So I'm going to go into the sunlight and get all sparkly right now.
I should become a werewolf.
Yeah.
God damn it. God, I messed up.
All right, speaking of horror, let's talk to Frank about his documentary work. Now, you have
that's
this
a
new...
That's tremendous segue. Well,
yes.
Speaking of horror and horrible, let's talk about your film, shall we?
I work on the segues.
No. What kind of monster are you, Frank? Yeah.
What kind of horrible monster are you? Please, let's...
Now, we have a new one. This one, actually, we are talking about, and we can announce it a little bit. We don't have the rights yet, but this is something we will eventually carry in the store. Mm-hmm. We're very excited about this. This is Frank's documentary about H.P. Lovecraft. It's called Fear of the Unknown, and it has interviews with everyone from John Carpenter, Guillermo del Toro, Neil Gaiman, and Peter Straub. It's a fantastic documentary.
Talk about Thank you. The inspiration to make this film and the process, you know, what you went through to get it done and all that.
Well, I mean, I had read Lovecraft stories when I was younger. I knew about Call of Cthulhu, the role-playing game. Mm-hmm. So I knew about the monsters from when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. Where Fear of the Unknown came up is I was working with Anchor Bay doing DVD bonus material, and the Reanimator special edition had come up, and we were pitching ideas for what to go on the DVD, and I threw out, what about a Lovecraft biography? Nobody's done it. And they were like, great. And they really encouraged us to... I started doing the research. I started approaching people. I know Guillermo del Toro was talking about Mountains of Madness even back then, which was like 2006 or 7. And I'll start approaching all these people. The moment... Actually, it was the same day I received emails from Guillermo del Toro, Neil Gaiman, and Peter Straub saying, yes, we will be in this documentary. Oh. Was the day that Anchor Bay said, we don't have the money for it. We're not going to do it. So here I am, stuck with these three heavyweight guys wanting to be in a film right. on Lovecraft. And that was when my my producing partner, Jim Myers, said, I was like, fuck it. Let's just go do it. Neil Gaiman's going to be in San Francisco. Let's get the interview and we'll make it ourselves. And that's really how Lovecraft was born. I mean, originally it was supposed to be something actually, it was supposed to be an hour-long piece on a DVD, which is now a 90-minute documentary out there for all the Lovecraft fans.
So because Anchor Bay backed out, that's when you decided to just make it into a feature-length doc, basically? Yeah,
pretty much. I mean, because they backed out and we had already done all this research, I'd already approached all
these people. You were halfway there.
I was halfway there, exactly. I just needed the green light for them to go ahead and start gathering the interviews and everything else.
Did you have to get permission from Anchor Bay?
So? No, because at that point it was the pitch to them, and it's, you know, love. The other beauty about Lovecraft, at least for as tackling it as our first documentary, is that he's public domain. His stories are public domain.
Right.
His life is kind of out there. I mean, you could do it. And I'm a filmmaker. I went to film school. I mean, you know, we went to Temple, and mm-hmm. I wanted to make films. I was doing short films. I was enjoying making the bonus materials for like mm-hmm. Masters of Horror and stuff like that. This seemed a logical next step anyway, to go from doing a 20-minute featurette to doing a more feature-length documentary. So it made sense as well. So in a way, I'm happy that Anchor Bay said no, even though we went and did this totally with sweat equity. We did
sure.
it ourselves mm-hmm. and put our own money into it.
So, yeah, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, no, that never happens. Never happens in Hollywood. It's bad news. Bad news.
What has been the greatest challenge in getting this film done?
I think the greatest challenge with any independent project you do nowadays, especially now that the market and the formulas for how you get films financed and released have changed so much.
Oh yeah, like it's changing every 3 seconds.
Every three seconds. I mean, and it happened with Lovecraft too. I mean, we went the more traditional route of you got a distributor, uh-huh. the distributor was going to take it to the film markets mm-hmm. and sell it to this territory and this territory, and they put it out domestically on DVD and try to get television. That's what you used to do as a filmmaker. You would go give it to a distributor and hope that something good happened.
Right.
But that model changed the day we handed over the film almost,
sure.
With a mixture of the economy doing what it did, mm-hmm. As well as just the internet and streaming and all the technology changing. But the hardest part at the end of the day is not the making of the film. I mean, it's really inexpensive to make a film and documentaries as well.
Oh, yeah. The production is...
The production's the easy part. The editing's the easy part. It's letting people know the film is out there. That's mm-hmm. the hardest
sure.
thing. And that's where distributors and studios still have the upper hand against independents doing the more...
Well, they have a marketing budget.
They have a marketing budget.
Well, the studios do. The distributors don't
yeah,
use
they,
it
yeah,
as
they,
much.
Well, yeah. Distributors not so much, but the studios definitely
yeah.
do.
Yeah, and they have a marketing budget, and they have direct access to these major media outlets.
Right.
They can just
right.
say, put this out there mm-hmm. and okay, and everyone will promote it.
Right.
Right.
And the distributors, they may not have had a marketing budget with the distributors, but they had access to wholesalers. They had access to replication plants and deals they could make, which as a filmmaker, you understand that you have to have like 1,000 DVDs made. You understand that has to be authored. But it's not something you readily have at your fingertips mm-hmm. unless you've already done it before.
Right.
So first time out, that was something I knew about, especially having worked with a DVD company, but that was one of those things that, like, oh, wow, that costs more money than I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's where it becomes – it's also becoming easier now because everybody's doing downloads.
Yep.
You have your sites. You have all these different aggregators who can help spread the word. You have podcasts like this.
Exactly.
You have – and there's the blogs, and the networks among the people are becoming stronger and stronger. I think it's a great time to be an independent filmmaker in general. For me as a documentary filmmaker, I think it's an even better time.
Yeah. Having – going through this myself with a documentary, and that is the biggest I mean, getting it done was a little bit of a challenge, but the getting people to know about it, but it's like...
Plus you had no crew, too. It was you and a camera.
Yeah, it was me and a camera. It was me and a camera. And
yeah,
then,
Frank had a couple people helping him.
Sometimes, but...
Yeah.
the thing that I've found is it is more work now as a filmmaker, yeah. but you have more control and you have sort of more say in it. Like in the old model that you're talking about, you just made the movie, you turned it over to some people and they sort of ran with it, and maybe you would do an occasional interview. Whereas now you have to be the driving force, primarily online, to let people know about your movie. Going through that, I sort of welcome, I'd almost rather, I mean, that's all Chris and I are, is do-it-yourselfers. I mean, that's what this whole podcasting movement is, and everything online is just do it yourself.
Yeah, we sell movies, you know, pretty consistently. You know, every week downloads go out. It's been really great, and people are more interested in them now than the hard DVD copies anymore.
Yeah, I think the DVD is I think it's still going to stay there. I think it's still going to be, because you can
it's an archived medium.
It's an archived, exactly. Yeah, and you can have special features on it that a download can't have.
Right. Well, right. They're gonna live side by side.
I think it's a library. It's people are reading books on Kindle and iPads, but there's still plenty of people that like the hard book and put that on their bookshelf. And
there's a whole other level to it too, which could take over the whole rest of the podcast. But there's also the notion that most of the way things are set up with the films you buy as downloads, it's very rare that you actually own the copy that you buy. If you buy something from iTunes or Amazon, you're
buying a license.
You're buying a license. It's not your physical copy to do what you wish.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize that. Yes, they think it's just, well, it's easy. I can download it. It's great. And, you know, the average person wants to download something because they want to see it, and they're not thinking about wanting to maybe someday in the future pluck it off the shelf and put it in again. Mm-hmm. That's where DVDs still have the upper hand, I think, is because when you buy a DVD, it's yours.
It's a physical product you own.
You can pop it in Handbrake, throw it on your iPod. You can take it to a friend's house. You can loan it to a friend.
You can watch it on a plane. You can do all that stuff. Yeah,
you can watch it on a train. You can watch it. Sorry, I got Dr. Seuss for a moment.
So now I will not download. No, I won't. I will not download on a boat.
What? No Wi-Fi.
That's why you can't download on a boat.
So now you have another documentary called The Splat Pack. This is a documentary about the Splatter Pack filmmakers.
The Splat Pack was a group of filmmakers that really kind of came into being in the early aughts, early 2000s. Your Eli Roth, your Rob Zombie,
Neil James Marshall,
Wong, Neil Marshall, Alexander Aja. I directed that film with another Temple friend of ours, Mark Henry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That one, I mean, I'm a horror fan.
Temple University, that's
what Temple University.
Yeah, Temple
University.
In Philadelphia.
Not Temple Bledsoe? You guys are part of the Temple Bledsoe fan club?
It's Tempest.
Tempest. That's right. Tempest Bledsoe. But
how do you know that?
Yeah.
By the way, Chris,
I just pulled it up on IMDb. Yeah.
Well, that also we went to Temple.
It's required. Yeah, believe me, we know all about the Cosby Show.
Because Bill Cosby was an alumni.
Yes.
The Splat Pack for me, they're the films like Hostel, the Saw films. They may not be everybody's cup of tea, but what those filmmakers did was that they showed Hollywood that horror films were profitable, and they showed Hollywood that horror films could be critically praised. Hostel was a very highly praised film,
and
a lot of people forget that,
kind of relatively on the cheap, or at least cheaper than a regular studio film.
Exactly. But you look at films, the Neil Marshall films, The Descent, Dog Soldiers.
Yeah.
These are fantastic movies.
Right.
The Splat Pack obviously wanted to be more R-rated horror, heavy on the gore, because they wanted to go back to the pre-Scream method of filmmaking, method of horror filmmaking anyway. But these guys definitely brought horror into the mainstream. And that's why we have a lot more horror films, and unfortunately also why we have the Texas Chainsaw and Nightmare on Elm Street remakes. But
there's a buck to be made.
Horror films have always been on the outcast. Horror as a genre has always been on the outside. That people have never really looked at it with any profound respect.
Hitchcock never got an Oscar.
Well, Hitchcock, but
you know what I mean?
But Hitchcock, but remember that Hitchcock's in that whole entire marketing twist. He didn't make horror films. He made thrillers.
Right.
You know, so Birds and Psycho, while very much horror movies, are thrillers. So it's a slightly different bend. Mm-hmm. But horror films definitely have never really been given their fair shake. The Splat Pack, to a certain extent, I think, made people look at them differently.
Where are these DVDs available right now?
Right now, you can purchase both over Amazon. The Splat Pack also is our first foray into self-distribution.
Right.
We might start carrying these?
So we'll definitely
Lovecraft, we're talking to you guys about Lovecraft for sure.
Okay.
And then you have the new one, Men in Suits, now, which sounds really awesome.
Well, Men in Suits, I think, is going to be Lovecraft was the one where we got used to the whole format and we're trying things. Splat Pack was the second film where we, try to get by without the second film curse.
Right.
So far, it seems we have. Men in Suits is a bigger documentary for us because Lovecraft was talking heads.
Right.
For better or worse, there's not much. There's no footage of Lovecraft. I can't go and get old audio recordings or anything of him.
I should do a seance.
Yeah, I could do a seance. I could do that. Actually, before we get into Men in Suits, the funny thing was one of the things that people with the critiques of Lovecraft that we had is it was straight up biography. We didn't go into the cult aspects of Lovecraft and finding out the true cultist aspects of like summoning one of the old ones into your living room. They wanted more.
You mean
of
the nuts and bolts of summoning demons,
or just the nuts?
That's going to be on the iPhone bonus app.
Yeah, that's an extra.
The iPhone bonus.
Yeah.
We're going to summon a demon.
Summon a demon. But Men in Suits, we were lucky. Men in Suits is about the actors who bring creature suits to life. Anything from a gorilla to Godzilla. The Doug Jones is in Pan's Labyrinth and the Hellboy films. Brian Steele, another actor like that as well.
You do mocap too, or just the suits?
We touch base on mocap because suit acting. I mean, a lot of people think that rubber suits, they're just not realistic anymore. But you really. There are so many studios, effects studios, who are working with animatronics and really can do things that are so lifelike. Spectral Motion, ADI, KMB, and all those places. They really can make a practical monster live and breathe. But it's not just them. It's not just the design. It's these guys inside. It's these actors inside.
Now, for those of you, just as an explanation, practical means that it's not computer generated.
Not computer generated. Mm-hmm. Although there's been a marriage.
You have the suit and then you have it enhanced on top with some CG. Absolutely. It looks great.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Yeah, that's the way.
That is the way. Yeah. Because I love practical.
Because you get the organic motion of the actor in the suit and then you get the embellishment of the CG on top of it. No, it looks fantastic.
Too much CG, as we've talked about on the show.
Well, then it looks like you're watching a video game.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And you might as well nominate it for best animated film because that's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's too much CG. So Suits, in addition to looking at the history of that and looking at the craft and what these guys did, we were very fortunate. There's a film called Knights of Badassdom that's going to be coming out, I think, next year.
Brian Posehn talked about that movie when he was here. Yeah.
And Joe Lynch is the director. It's from a production company called IndieVest. They have a creature in their film, the full animatronic thing, and we were very fortunate to be able to follow the actor Douglas Tate through all of his fittings all the way up to his first night on set, so we could see the process these actors have to go through and the physical strain they have to go through. I mean, when we were up in Spokane, Washington in the middle of July filming the first night on set of Knights of Badassdom, and it's July. It's summer evenings. And he would take his head off, and there would be steam pouring off of his head. And there's a lot of physical stress involved in suit acting. And there's also just a lot of misunderstandings involved in it. So we were for it. It's going to be great. We got the original Godzilla in there, Haro Nakajima.
Oh,
great. We were able to interview him. Tom Woodruff Jr., who's played the alien in a lot of the alien films, as well as Pumpkinhead for anybody who goes back that far, and we went over to Henson, and that's where mocap comes in because mocap is where a lot of these actors who would do the suits can go now, and it's we have the Andy Serkis's of the world, and obviously Andy Serkis is a tremendous actor, but Henson does something a little bit different with their mocap in the sense that. Most Henson characters, if you're familiar with Muppets, they're big and fluffy.
Right.
So they're not just normal human size. So it's almost these actors have to wear frameworks on themselves so that their hands don't come inside their bodies because the characters are like on Sid the Science Kid which is a mocap show that Henson does.
Right. Now, but they use actual kids, right?
Or no, actors? No, no. It's actual actors. It's full size as actors like you and me, 5 foot eight, or some of them are shorter. Mm-hmm. Missy Rojas is one of the is the actress who plays Sid, and she's about 4 foot six, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But she's played gorillas in a lot of movies as well. But it definitely there's a transition. Mocap is where suit acting is going, but I hope we don't lose it because there's something to be said about a real creature being in the world. That's what drove me nuts about Rise of the Planet of the Apes, is as good as Andy Serkis was, everything was CGI.
Yeah.
It all looked, there was just, I mean, and we've been doing gorillas in Hollywood forever.
Yeah.
And we've been doing fantastic.
Yeah, but you don't want, but you don't want it to look like Congo.
Well, yes, that's true.
Amy says, bad movie.
Wow. Nice Congo reference. Yeah.
But yes, that's Men in Suits, and that's what's coming up from us next time.
Well, we're very excited about, I know there's some legal stuff you still have to get through with the distributor, but we will be carrying Lovecraft in the store. We'll keep you guys posted that as a digital download, and we are very excited to be adding it to the Comedy Film Nerds feature film family.
We'll be happy to be there.
Excellent.
Outstanding.
So let's move on to DVDs and Blu-rays. We have Our Idiot Brother is coming out.
Perfect.
And I actually haven't seen Idiot Brother or the next one, 30 Minutes or Less. That was the pizza heist.
Yeah, I saw 30 Minutes or Less. Yeah, we talked about that. It's all right. I think they made it a little too jokey, especially since it was based on a real thing.
Right, and the family wasn't so happy about that.
Yeah.
Another Earth, which is kind of a drama.
Yeah. Again, I remember Another Earth, I just was a little...
not as much science fiction as you thought.
I thought there'd be more science fiction.
You thought there'd be an actual Another Earth.
I thought there would, I thought there would be the thing that's in the title.
Right. Yeah.
There is.
Yeah,
I mean,
good luck.
No, there is, but it's just...
Remember the movie Monsters.
They spend very little time about that. It's really just about this relationship, which is fine, but it's like...
You want more.
I want some sci-fi. Sure. You're telling me it's about a duplicate planet. Like, let's get into it.
And Tucker and Dale versus Evil. This was already on demand, but it'll be on DVD right now. It actually looks really funny. Mm-hmm. We had one of our guests saw it, and he really liked it, though. I think it was Jonah Ray. And then he said it went off the rails a little bit towards the end, but it worth your, according to Jonah, worth your time. Mm-hmm. And we have coming out this week, Shame. Another Michael Fassbender naked movie, apparently.
Yes. The trailer was with Dangerous Method, and it was the first NC-17 trailer I've ever seen in a theater.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
I saw it before The Descendants last night. Mm-hmm. It looks interesting.
Now, it's that kind of Tango in Paris kind of like drama, sexual... not really. I can't say awakening. Michael Fassbender's a little old to have a sexual awakening, but that kind of thing where he's like he leads this hedonistic lifestyle, and then I think his relatives comes to town, and he's got to kind of figure out what he's doing with his life, kind of thing. You know, in between shagging girls.
Shagging. Yes, he's shagging girls. Yeah. Do I make you horny?
Next movie, Outrage, where you and I actually both saw. Mm-hmm. And we split on it. You liked it a little more than I did.
I really like Yakuza movies, so it's definitely full to Yakuza. And actually, even little Sandy Narita put some more clarification about
the bowing,
and the language and the etiquette and the hierarchy and stuff like that, which is pretty interesting. Yeah, if you go to the Comedy Film Nerd fan page, you can see.
So you actually really need to, if you want to enjoy this movie, you have to actually do the research on how the Yakuza operates. Because it's like stuff like, well, that can't be right, but like they actually have offices, like the higher level families have offices. Like, well, wait, you're the organized crime family. Well, no, we have an office. It's downtown. Yeah, that which means you can't open up another office in our town because we already have one. But towards the end, I thought it just got like murder porn. You know, it was like all this. It was like the end of Godfather 2 over and over and over again.
Is there anything wrong with that?
For an hour, there is.
As long as it's Godfather 2 and not 3.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Beverly Hills 90210 goes to Palermo. That's what I call Godfather 3.
Yeah, but you're just watching Sofia Coppola going, boy, someday, as bad as an actress she is, she's going to make some great movies.
She's going to make great movies. She's learning how to direct actors.
And that she has.
Yes.
God bless her.
She has her place.
So Sleeping Beauty is...
Michael Corleone twitching around, drinking orange juice because he's a diabetic. Yeah. Great stuff. Sorry. can't let that movie go.
Sleeping Beauty.
It's in my box set, and I just...
Sleeping Beauty?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have the Sleeping Beauty box set. No, Godfather 3, why did you put that in the box
you
set?
You know what?
It's going to contaminate the other two.
You know what? It's interesting is when they interviewed Coppola, he was saying that they just pushed him and pushed him to get it out for Christmas, and he wanted more time with it.
Of course.
And that doesn't excuse putting his daughter in it. But still, you know, there's... I'm sure if he had more time with it, he could have cleaned up that movie.
Yeah, yeah. All right, okay. Sleeping Beauty.
This is a weird movie. It's another kind of, like, no family films out this this coming. They all came out last weekend, but this is a weird kind of another sexual drama where I don't even know how to describe it. What I read from the description is the star, Emily Browning, she becomes a prostitute, but only when she's asleep. So there's this weird fetish of men having sex with her when she's asleep. That's why it's called Sleeping Beauty. It has nothing to do with the fairy tale. I'm pretty sure it doesn't. I think that's what the men are paying for. They want her to sleep before they can have sex with her.
I'm sorry. I don't want to be a prude, but what is going on?
I don't know. This is about as erotic as Crash.
Wow. Okay.
I'd like a woman to be awake.
Apparently this, again... We're catering to a specific type of audience here.
Yeah, creeps.
Yeah.
Really? Wow. Okay.
So I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure who this movie is for, but I don't know even if we'll be able to get somebody to see it this weekend, but we'll see.
Go watch a Yakuza movie.
Yeah, go. Yeah. If you have a choice.
Or if they go see Sleeping Beauty, they can get a free Comedy Central travel mug.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
You can walk away with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, go see Shame instead. Yeah.
Go see Shame.
Yeah. If you want to see if you only can see one sexually deviant movie this weekend,
yeah.
Go see Shame.
Go see Shame. I think you'll like it.
Well, that is our show.
That is our program.
Mm-hmm. We want to thank our guest, Frank Woodward, for some very insightful documentary filmmaking information.
Follow us on weirdstuff.com, WYRDstuff.com. You can find out.
That's the production company's website?
Great. You can find out more stuff about Men and Seasons as it comes out.
Twitter and Facebook, you on?
Twitter and Facebook as well. You have Weird Stuff on Twitter. And on Facebook, there's a Men and Suits fan page. Please come and join us.
Oh, great.
Go like the fan page, you guys. Check that out. So if they go to weirdstuff.com, they can get updates.
We'll have our blog there, updates on the project. Post trailers, and you can see trailers for all the films there.
And awesome. When we have the film live too, we'll announce it on both places.
Definitely. You guys like that fan page.
Mm-hmm.
So I will be, where am I going to be performing? I will be at the Schofield Military Base December 3rd in Oahu.
I don't think that's open to the public.
Nope. but if you maybe
you're in the service,
you're
and you're going to be there.
And that's where you're stationed.
Yeah.
I will be performing for you. Or maybe
if you requested a transfer.
Sure. Or go to your recruiter's office today on Oahu, and then you can see my show. I'm sure they'd love to have you. Tell them that's why you're joining the military. I want to see Grandma.
For the free comedy shows.
The free comedy shows. Yeah. So check that out. And then I will be... at the Fort Lauderdale Improv with Doug Benson Monday, December 12th, and with Doug again at the Improv in West Palm Beach December 13th.
And December 6th through 11th, I will be at the Improv at the Las Vegas Harrah's.
Vegas.
So please stop by. I will be bringing books and DVDs, too. I will sign them after the shows.
And hookers and blow.
You can get those on your own. They're pretty easy. Yeah, I won't be selling those after the show.
Come on, Chris. Yeah. You don't sell blow anymore?
I still get a taste. Yeah.
You got to kick a back a little envelope upstairs. That's all I'm saying. It's Chris's neighborhood. That's all I'm talking about. Chris is an Italian from back east, guys. You gotta just kick an envelope upstairs. Yeah, one gets it. There's no problems.
Yeah, that's the way business is done.
Just wet his beak a little bit.
Yeah,
he's not gonna take a bird bath.
No,
just to get his beak a little tight.
It's only fair.
Keep the wheels working, guys. A little grease. Keeps
a little Chicago everywhere.
A little Chicago, a little Chi-Town, baby. That city runs on grease. All right. Thanks again to Frank Woodward.
Yeah, and we want to thank you guys again. It is the holiday shopping season. Like you said, we got a lot of free stuff for you when you buy stuff. And, you know, you buy a T-shirt, you get a Woot Monkey. If you want to buy something and just put in the customer notes, hey, send us a Woot Monkey, chances are we will.
Chances are we will. Do your holiday shopping with us, and you won't get trampled or maced.
Yes. We appreciate it.
Unless you come physically into the garage.
Yes.
And try to steal the gargoyle, then it's fucking game
then it's
on.
Game on.
Yeah, get ready, bitch. We're going to treat you like Stitcher. All right. I'm Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. Thanks a lot. And remember, as always,
Han shot first.